This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what coming up on Africa News Tonight. The Gaza and Israel, the prospect of a protracted war has set in. And two top government officials in Chad resigned after sex tapes of them circulated on social media. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. President Joe Biden just wrapped up a visit to Israel, a region gripped by violence, including an explosion at a Gaza City hospital that killed hundreds. To brief us more on the matter, VOA's Linda Grantstein is standing by in Tel Aviv. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you so much.
So we kind of talked about it yesterday regarding the explosion at the Gaza City Hospital.
Yes.
What did President Biden have to say about this, and who is to blame?
Well, Israel said that it was the Islamic Jihad, that it had fired rockets that had fallen short, and actually has some video footage that seems to back this up. The Palestinians said that it was an Israeli airstrike and are still saying that, and close to 500 people were killed and another several hundred injured, a lot of women and children. President Biden said one of the first things he said when he arrived in Israel today was that he had seen evidence from the Pentagon that proved that it was not Israel, although he did not give any details. Now, for Israel, that was a very important statement, because Israel, really wants the world to know that it was not behind this attack that killed so many civilians.
Biden's historic arrival in wartime Tel Aviv yesterday is the first trip to Israel by an American president during a time of war. So since the October 7th attacks by Hamas, Linda, could you tell us what is the latest number on the death in the Israeli side as well as the Gaza Strip?
Sure. On the Israeli side, I'm sorry to sort of tell you that there again is some breaking news that just a little while ago they found the bodies of a woman and child, possibly her son, in the kibbutz. Now, this is 12 days after the fighting, and apparently they had tried to escape the Hamas assault by going onto the roof, and they were burned to death. A child was about 5 or 6 years old. So that it's very hard for Israelis that there's still bodies being identified. There are still several hundred people who haven't been identified. The death toll on the Israeli side is just over 1,400, with several hundred that haven't been identified, as well as 199 hostages. On the Palestinian side, it's over 3,300.
It's so sad. The president has been attempting to walk a fine line between supporting Israel and keeping the violence from spiraling into a wider military conflict, a mission, made more complicated by the hospital blast we just talked about. He and other U.S. administration officials have been warning other regional players, namely Iran and its proxy Hezbollah, from expanding the fighting further. Will that warning be heeded?
Well, that's the question. It's not clear. You know, over the last few days, Hezbollah has fired, rockets at Israeli military positions. Israel has responded with artillery fire. It has not gotten out of control yet, but it could. And Hezbollah is a very serious possible fighting force. And Israel is obviously watching it very carefully. In fact, Khaled Mashal, one of the leaders of Hamas, who was in Qatar, said to Hezbollah, you need to do more. You're not doing enough to help us, and really trying to push Hezbollah into the conflict. One of the reasons that Joe Biden came was to send a strong signal to Hezbollah and to Iran, as you said, to stay out of the conflict. So far, the Hezbollah involvement has been limited, but if that changes, then Israel would be forced to fight on two fronts.
And the ground campaign Israel was talking about, has that been on? Is it on hold now, or is it still going to go on?
It seems like it's still going to go on. I mean, Israel, I think, wants to do as much damage in its airstrikes as it can. It told, you know, over a million Palestinians to leave northern Gaza and to move south, and about half a million have done so. I spoke to one woman tonight who works for Oxfam in Gaza, and she is with her husband, her mother-in-law, and her five children. They've moved three times since the war started, and now she is in Rafah, near the Gaza-Egypt border, where on the Egyptian side of the border, dozens of trucks of humanitarian aid are lined up. Israel apparently told President Biden that Israel will not allow aid to come from the Israeli side as long as Hamas holds hostages, but it will not stop aid coming in from the Egyptian side. It won't bomb the Rafah border crossing. So it's likely that hopefully soon we'll see some aid, humanitarian aid, coming into Gaza. I mean, people are absolutely terrified there, and they're just, they don't know how to protect their children, and they're afraid that they'll be killed in an Israeli airstrike. And Gaza really is on the brink of a humanitarian disaster, so the aid is really needed.
The humanitarian response. The president was expected to meet King Abdullah II of Jordan, President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, to discuss this very humanitarian response we're talking about. So why was the whole thing scrapped, the meeting?
Well, that meeting was scrapped because of the airstrike on the hospital, which Palestinians blamed Israel for, and they see the Americans as an ally of Israel. So Mahmoud Abbas said he would not meet President Biden under those conditions. And so the meeting in Jordan that was really supposed to kind of come up with a united Arab front against Iran was scrapped. So actually, President Biden spent more time in Israel. He met with family members, survivors, first responders, and he was, you know, he listened to each one. So his visit actually in Israel was several hours longer than had originally been planned.
VOA's Linda Granstein bringing us up to date in situations in Israel and the Gaza Strip. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
In Gaza and Israel, the prospect of a protracted war has set in, with thousands dead on both sides and Israel calling up 360,000 reservists. Some regional analysts say a cessation of hostilities seems a distant prospect. Palestinians expect more Israeli moves, including using sophisticated missiles to penetrate Gaza underground tunnels where Hamas members are located. Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché, discussed these scenarios with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi.
Well, let me stress first, this is a real tragedy what happened, and a war crime by all standards. Israel says that the hospital was hit by a misguided missile of the Islamic Jihad. Hamas claims it was an Israeli attack, and most in the Arab world believe them. But facts are, about 10% of the Hamas and Islamic Jihad missiles misfire, impact early or misguided. And it's also a fact that Israeli bombs also do not always hit the intended targets or hit even maybe civilian targets by intent. But one thing is important. Israeli bombs and missiles use different kinds of explosives and different kinds of propellant than the rockets of Hamas. So the best thing would be to implement an international investigation, which should be easy to prove. What was the weapon? Was it an Israeli bomb, or was it a bomb or a missile from Hamas? And if Hamas is sure that it was an Israeli weapon, they should allow this kind of investigation. And if Israel is sure that it was Hamas, they should facilitate this. I expect that Israel will continue its military operation with the aim of entirely destroying Hamas, while being in the future, hopefully, even more careful to prevent civilian casualties. However, this will be difficult as Hamas intentionally mixes with civilians and tries to provoke a higher number of civilian casualties by these tactics. With regard to the blockade, I'm pretty sure that the Israelis will continue this until the 200 Israeli hostages taken by Hamas, most of them civilians, are freed. But let me underline, there are not only 200 Israeli hostages in the Gaza Strip, there are also 2 million Palestinians.
Some Western military analysts believe that Israel would use its new powerful Gaddam missiles to penetrate Gaza's tunnels and kill all Hamas members hiding in these tunnels. Is that a possibility?
Yes, this is certainly an option. And I guess the Israelis will strike the tunnels even if they are aware that there are Israeli hostages in there. And they will strike these tunnels even if they are aware that this will also have an impact on civilians nearby. One of the weaknesses of the Israeli defense is that they were overcautious to avoid civilian casualties on their own side and overcautious to avoid victims and casualties on the side of the Israeli military. This time is gone now. After more than 1,400 civilians were killed, and as I said before, more than 200 civilians are kept prisoner in the Gaza Strip, the Israelis need to attack even in a more rude way to achieve their military objectives.
But what would be next if Gaza is not ruled by Hamas?
That's a good question. I would say, depending on how long the war lasts, there needs to be a solution which includes not only a military answer to the conflict. It is certainly necessary for the Israelis, even if their right-wing government doesn't like it, to find a political solution to the conflict. And this certainly excludes the expansion of the Israeli settlements in the West Bank. And this certainly needs a different attitude of the Israelis towards a Palestinian state. Even the society in Israel doesn't want to continue the war forever. So a political settlement is needed, even if the Israeli right-wing government likes it or not.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, former Austrian military attaché, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. The Committee to Protect Journalists says at least 17 journalists are confirmed dead in the Hamas-Israeli conflict, and several others have been injured in just a week and a half. Gypsy Goulain, CPJ's communications director, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that 13 of the dead journalists were Palestinian, 3 were Israeli, and 1 was Lebanese.
Unfortunately, most of those casualties have been in Gaza, and they have been Palestinian journalists who form the backbone, the journalistic core covering much of this conflict and what's happening inside Gaza. Without them, we know nothing.
What kinds of risks do journalists face, especially in Gaza, as Israel continues its airstrikes and prepares for a ground assault?
Well, first, I should say that covering conflict generally is probably the most dangerous assignment that a journalist can undertake. There are obviously all the physical threats that the entire civilian population is facing in Gaza is one that journalists are facing. But journalists function very much like first responders. They show up immediately where something is happening, where people have been hurt, where some kind of development is taking place. And that increases the level of risk because they are going to where things are happening.
Are threats being made against journalists still that are covering this conflict?
Yes, there are threats. In addition to the 17 killed, we are looking into about 100 cases of journalists who have been killed or threatened or attacked in some way. And so there is a lot going on. There's a brewing anti-media sentiment outside of Gaza. There are threats that people are receiving through anonymous phone calls. There are threats when people are out reporting. There is hostility from Israeli police. And it is very, very important that journalists continue to report precisely because there is so much disinformation about this conflict. There's also another layer to this, which is the issue of censorship. We called earlier today for Israel not to close the local bureau of the Qatari broadcaster Al Jazeera and to allow them to continue reporting. There is a proposal from the Israeli authority, from the Israeli government, to basically be able to detain people who are hurting national morale. And this vague accusation of incitement for covering protests, is being used against Al Jazeera, but it may also be used against other journalists, which is highly, highly problematic.
Are any reporters missing or being detained you know of right now?
Right now, there are 3 missing journalists and 8 are injured that we have been able to confirm. There are many other cases that we are looking into. We have our Middle East and North Africa team is working around the clock.
And when you say there's reporters missing, do you know if they're on the Gaza side or in Israel?
They are on the Gaza side.
What is CPJ's message to both sides waging this war?
Well, our most important message is really that journalists are civilians. And that means under international humanitarian law, they are to be respected and protected. That means that they are not to be blocked from having access. They are not to be taken off the air with vague accusations and claims of national morale. They are not to be obstructed. They are not to be attacked. And very importantly, they are not to be deliberately targeted.
That was Gypsy Gouillain, CPJ's communications director, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. 2 top government officials in Chad resigned today after 2 separate sex tapes purporting to show the men were shared widely on social media. According to Reuters News, Prime Minister Saleh Kibazabo accepted the resignations of Defense Minister Daoud Yahya Brahim and the government's General Secretary Haliki Chuao Mahamat. No other details have been released. The videos, which were circulated Sunday and Monday, purportedly showed the men engaging in intimate acts with other people. Reuters could not independently verify the material and was not immediately able to reach either man for comment. Gabon's coup leaders have ordered the resumption of work at utility and construction sites after years of abandonment. Military rulers have threatened to arrest the heads of business enterprises who have collected money for work that was not performed as part of a promised crackdown on corruption. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Gabon's military-appointed Prime Minister Raymond Dongsima says scores of companies have resumed work after the Central African State's coup leader, General Brice Oligui Nguema, visited several abandoned projects in the capital, Libreville. Sima told State TV on Tuesday that Nguema instructed the military-appointed government to ask contractors that abandoned work after collecting money to resume their projects or face arrest. Nguema began a tour of abandoned road, water and electricity projects in Libreville on Saturday. On Monday, Gabon's State TV showed images of civilians celebrating as Nguema visited the sites in several poor suburbs. Women and children embraced and shook hands with Nguema, with some shedding tears. They said it was the first time a Gabonese leader had visited poor suburban neighborhoods, a claim VOA could not independently verify. Civilians told Nguema that each time elections approached, ousted President Ali Bongo Ondimba would promise drinkable water, electricity, and good roads, and dispatch equipment to start construction. But after the elections, construction work would be abandoned and the equipment removed. Ngema told civilians that an anti-corruption task force created by the military junta has a list of companies that received money but never executed projects. He spoke on state TV. Ngema says contractors who received money from Gabon's former regime should execute the projects they were duly paid for, without which they will be arrested. He says he has told companies that civilians in densely populated and poor neighborhoods like Bizango Bibere, which he visited in the suburbs of the capital Libreville, urgently need water, electricity, and roads. Civilians say several companies resumed work as soon as Ngema left. 50-year-old Baba Jack Abesolo lives in Bizango Bibere. He says by launching construction work on projects abandoned for up to 10 years, Ngema has proven that he is a leader who listens to the cries of the downtrodden. Abosolo spoke on Gabon's state TV on Monday. Joseph Dotse is a road construction engineer in Libreville. Dotse says Ngema asked them to resume work they temporarily suspended due to heavy rains. He says in 10 days, his company, Gabon Construction, will complete work on a 6-kilometer stretch of road Ngema visited. Dotse said ousted President Bongo paid half of the money for the road, and he expects the military junta to settle the remaining bill. Guy Roger Makongo is a lecturer of political science at the Omar Bongo University in Gabon's capital, Libreville. He spoke on a messaging app. He says Ngema has been respecting the roadmap he set up to restore democratic rule following the August 30 bloodless coup. He says besides fighting corruption and carrying out consultations to organize a national dialogue by the end of this year, Ngema has set up a constitutional council, appointed the government and members of the Senate and National Assembly from the opposition, civil society, and the army. Makongo says many people are, however, skeptical that Ngema will hand power to civilian rule soon because he has not given a possible date for a return to constitutional order. Gabon's military-appointed government says Sylvia Bongo Ondimba Valentin, the Franco-Gabonese wife of Gabon's ousted president, Bongo's son, Nuruddin Bongo Valentin, as well as 8 of the deposed leader's aides and members of his cabinet have been arrested in an anti-corruption drive launched by the military junta. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has criticized Western efforts to reduce developing countries' dependence on the Chinese economy, warning of unilateral sanctions, economic coercion, decoupling, and supply chain disruption. Xi's message came today during a two-day Belt and Road Forum in Beijing that about 1,000 delegates, including several heads of state and representatives of over 130 countries, attended. Russian President Vladimir Putin was among them. Xi said his plan, the Belt and Road Initiative, launched 10 years ago, built global infrastructure and energy networks connecting Asia with Africa and Europe through overland and maritime routes. Participants at the summit signed agreements on $97.2 billion worth of cooperation projects. Imprisoned Senegalese opposition figure Ousmane Sonko says he has resumed a hunger strike that he called off last month. The French news agency AFP quoted him as saying he wanted to show solidarity with other activists unjustly arrested for expressing their political opinions. Sonko was jailed in July on charges including fomenting insurrection, criminal association in connection with a terrorist enterprise, and undermining state security over incidents dating back to 2021. He accuses President Macky Sall of attempting to prevent him from running in the 2024 presidential elections, charges denied by Sall, who was elected in 2012 and will not run for the elections. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.